This week on Barbell Shrugged, we talk about how you should stop rounding your back.
Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to barbellshrugged.com.
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Bledsoe, standing here with Chris Moore and Doug Larson, CTP behind the camera and with a microphone. And we have Charlotte as well. Today, we're going to be talking about how you should not be rounding your back. Quit rounding your back, please.
Why do you do that?
It hurts my eyes, for one.
It makes you look silly.
It does make you look silly. And I know that if you are rounding your back, you deep down feel really bad about it.
You want to figure out
exactly how to stop having that happen to you.
You walk around your gym with a Scarlet B. For back rounder.
Scarlet B?
Scarlet B. I was trying to think, what kind of thing I could throw in here? Scarlet letter works.
Just start handing that out.
For all you literature nerds out there.
Yeah. Right? You should just like get a jersey.
Or people who just graduated high school. I think everybody had to read that fucking book.
Yeah, no one did though, right?
No.
I did not.
Watch the movie.
I like it. It's like sex. That was the point of that. Oh, she's one of those. Humans.
And we're off.
I don't know nearly enough about that. So know what you're talking about.
So you know, we're having a little bit of a rough start here. But what you don't know is it took us 3.5 hours to plan this show.
It took us like 3 minutes to plan this show.
We spent 3 hours and 27 minutes planning three shows that'll never be on the air.
We're trying to link training efficiency with what you should and shouldn't do, and it got to be like, don't watch so much porn at work. It got to be like,
We were dead set about talking about porn for half an episode at one point.
Charlotte's up there going, what's happening here?
People needed to know the value we had to share with
them. If you want to watch some of that, it's on whose Periscope? Is it on your personal Periscope?
No, it's on Strug.
It's on Barbell Strug's Periscope. If you don't know what Periscope is, it's totally awesome. It's like live stream video of us.
And if you're watching this in the future, it's been defunct for years.
That's right.
Will YouTube outlive Periscope? Probably.
Yeah, probably.
Oh. So, we're going to be talking about don't round your back. There's some maybe not so obvious reasons why you don't want to do it. Doug, share with us why rounding your back is not good, aside from just not looking sexy.
The obvious reasons?
Yeah.
Yeah, the obvious reason is because you're going to blow your back out eventually. You're gonna slip a disc, which means you're going to push a disc out the back of your back, and it's going to push up against your spinal nerves, and it's really going to fucking hurt, and you're not going to be able to train anymore, and that sucks.
Or they just explode. I had a disc explode on me.
No, it just fucking like,
took it all the way, man.
Well, no, I mean, like, I was pulling a deadlift at a less than optimal back alignment position. It fucking blew out, popped. Lesson learned. Oh man!
I will point out that out of everybody in this room right now, Chris Moore is the most stubborn.
And it's a genetic anomaly.
Needs the most pounding for the information to get through the skull.
If I'm going to listen, I need a great dose of physical and emotional pain. And I go, you know what? I'm now ready to make a change in my life. No, but that did happen. I blew out 2 discs in my lumbar spine. I had 4 bulging discs in my spine after I got through playing football and the early years of paddle things, because I was not learning lessons the right way. The stubbornness. Yeah. Mostly, somebody tells you, you got to keep your back around her, Chris, when you do the squats. I go, I'll just keep trying. And it didn't work. That was my coaching advice the first time.
The coaching advice was a verbal cue.
It's a verbal cue that I see your back is rounding. Why don't you stop doing that? And, of course, just trying. More effort wasn't going to solve
the
problem.
And here's some more weight.
Yeah, and here's some more weight. In this case, it was like the X week, by 5th or 6th week in a row of doing heavy pulls with bad back alignment. And then, of course, that weak component gave.
Yeah,
and all trying what in the world wasn't going to change the outcome. Lesson learned.
Yeah, any less obvious things, Doug?
Yeah, you're going to look awful silly having your background, kind of like we just said. Like anytime I see a person pulling a deadlift or pulling a clean or squatting with a background, like they just look like they have no fucking idea what they're doing. So even the advanced competitors, if someone's a really good athlete and I see them rounding their back over and over and over again,
You're never taking advice from them.
I automatically know that they don't know what they're doing. They just happen to be a good athlete, which isn't necessarily the same thing.
In a competition, do you think maybe sometimes it's like, if you're laying out online, there's at least $5,000 you could win.
This is worth a long-term health of my back and spine.
Yeah, I mean, like,
when it's 5K.
Do you think there's a point where, like, the risk is okay? Like, okay, I'm at the finish line. I'm about to win. I'm willing to sacrifice my health a little bit.
Yes and no. So there, I see backs rounded in competition all the time, but I'd be willing to bet most of the people I see who are rounding their backs in competitions round their back all the time in training as well. So I don't, I don't think they do it perfectly all the time, and then they're making an exception just during this very important competition, very important to them. I doubt that's the case in most cases. And when they're rounding the back in competitions, I doubt it's for like the last few reps and the buzzer's about to go and they just need to get those last few reps. Usually it's like do one or two kind of good reps and then they round the back the rest of the time. That's usually what I see.
I would have to agree with that. Yeah.
You said the back goes to where it's been conditioned over the bulk of the work. Like if bad reps are making their way into the training, you'll sort of default to that habit when the stress and the pressure to finish the wad faster comes about.
Yeah, your muscles get strong in whatever position they're normally trained in. So if I'm bent over and I have a neutral spine like this, my low back muscles, my erectors are contracted right now. And so they might not be quite at end range. I'm not like all the way hyperextended where they're as short as possible, but they're at the middle of their contractile length. If I pull a deadlift and I pull like this, my back's getting stronger in this position where I'm getting used to being in this position. And so if I'm strongest in that position with my back round, because I do it in training all the time, then I'm automatically going to default to what feels like my strongest position. But that doesn't mean it's strongest, like I'm not going to get hurt because I'm strongest in that position. You're more likely to get hurt in that position, even if you feel like the weight moves the easiest. So being strong means the weight moves, but doesn't necessarily mean that you're stronger, like your back is more resilient or durable in that position. You're more likely to get hurt in that position, even if the weight moves where it feels lighter or moves easier.
So some people might go, oh, I can pull more weight. I'm more efficient in this position. It's like,
that's a big trap.
Technically, no. It might be time to take a step back, get a different position, get strong. I mean, we've talked about this a lot in regard to weightlifting is being strong in positions. Mm-hmm. So just because you're strong in a bad position doesn't make it a good position.
And, and for our iTunes listeners, if you're listening, you just didn't see any of the things Doug did, and for people who are not in the room, someone just fucking busted ass. Who was it?
I didn't bust ass, man.
Who was it?
Dude, you can't smell on YouTube either.
Oh, geez. That's what I just said for people not in the room. Fuck. All right, back to
I was waiting for you to say that you did it.
No. I have a feeling it was you.
Calling me out. I don't remember doing it, so I don't think it was me either. Charlotte? No one's taking the blame.
She's about to quit. She's like, screw you.
So we were basically implying that when we see competitions, we're implying CrossFit style competitions where people are metconning for time. But it happens in powerlifting and weightlifting and whatnot as well. Like especially in powerlifting, especially when people are deadlifting, it'd be somewhat common for people to round their backs on squats. But certainly deadlifts would be the event in a powerlifting meet where you'd see a lot more. Aggressively round backs.
Yeah. Chase for whatever allows you to lift the most weight. And like you said, the thing you really cued me in on training, Doug, you said when you feel yourself stronger in training a position, that rang a few bells with me. Like you would make an adjustment right now that make you feel more efficient and stronger doing this set of deadlifts, this set of squats. One acute tweak, because you're always fucking with your form trying to be as strong as possible. So one thing that allows you to get depth and, I feel better. And that's the thing that's sort of sowing the seeds for something that you can't undo 1 year, 2 years, 3 years down the line until you undo the original error. That's something it took me probably 10 years to do in powerlifting, is to undo those original habits of chasing load before I was actually ready to be in position to receive it.
That's why I'm a really big fan of technical maxes. So it's not the most weight, say we're talking deadlifts for the moment, it's not the most weight you can pick up off the floor and stand up with, it's the most weight you can do perfectly. And that's what most of your max attempts should be. Like
in training. Yeah.
Right.
And people have a hard time differentiating between training and competition.
Right.
Because one of the things that causes the problem is the group environment. You know, especially if you're in a group class where there is things going on where you're bending over to pick things up.
Right.
And now the competitive nature comes out in training. That's what's really putting people at risk, is they're not in the right mindset when they're training. They're in a competitive mindset, not a training mindset.
Right. Like, I'll use myself as an example. Like, I essentially pride myself on having good technique most of the time. And so whenever I'm doing something like deadlifts, I really go out of my way to make sure that I have a totally neutral, perfect spine at all times during training. But I can remember one time in my whole fucking life where I was in a powerlifting competition and I hit a PR with a perfectly neutral spine, and then I went for another PR 10 pounds heavier. Like, I hit 500 for the first time in a competition, and then I went for 510, and I remember rounding my back just a little bit and being like shocked that I did it. And what I mean is, like, I was like this, And then I went.
So it's what
like I barely moved at all, but again, I felt my spine move, and I was like, "Holy again, shit!" Like
for the standard, I remember across, that night you drank yourself to sleep out of shame.
That's right. I almost did the Japanese thing where I stabbed myself and I like cut myself
around my back.
So ashamed.
But I was gonna say that maybe I think you make a point about what goes on at gym. I think if you fail from something like a strain and around the gym, I think you really have to rethink your training. That should be something that actually happens almost never, as opposed to, I guess, what most people think of training heavy or doing max effort work, where they almost chase the strain. And that you can't help but build bad habits if every week you're going to fall out of that just to get the extra 5 pounds on a total. I'm thinking, if you really want to be maximally strong, I think you would never miss a weight in gym, really. Like, I don't think there's a place for it, necessarily. Especially from something like a rounding error, when that's not the fact that you pushed up against the limit, well, but you could actually lift. You just fucking failed on a basic biomechanical point.
Right, and most of the time, if you round, you know, just a little bit, it's probably not going to hurt you. To do it once in a while is not really a big deal, necessarily. It's the accumulation of those types of reps. And especially when you're actually hitting complete end range flexion. If you look at the research for like EMG, which is kind of how you measure activity in muscles, you'll be able to see that once you hit full end range flexion, your muscular activity basically goes to zero. You flatline and your muscles quit being able to even try to help. So it's not that they're not strong enough. They turn off completely. So once you hit full end range, like if I'm deadlifting and I go like this and I end up in this position where I am all the way round with my low back especially, then my muscles completely kick off. And then at that point, I really am just completely hanging on my tendons and my ligaments and the joint capsules. And I'm pressing the discs together to try to hold my back together somehow, some way. And without any muscular activity to assist in that, something eventually is going to just get pulled apart, which is essentially what happens. Like we talked about slipping the disc. That's not really something being pulled apart necessarily, but you still can.
Something's being squeezed out the other side.
Yeah, if you're not.
So you need a bologna sandwich and tomatoes keeps flopping out of the bread, you know?
Yeah.
I hate when that fucking happens.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to think about it like this, here, I'll use these books as an example.
What's your favorite books?
If you're on IG, Creativity Inc. and
11 Rings by Phil Jackson.
Basketball
Zen Master of Basketball. I recommend that book too. It's fucking fantastic.
So I don't even like to watch basketball unless it's in person.
I have a judgment about the content.
I don't like to watch it unless I'm watching it.
I don't like to watch guys play football on the court.
I don't like watching it on TV. I love it in person.
Okay. All right, well, the fucking book is good, Mike.
The book is fantastic.
That's what you were going to say.
I'm not a basketball.
Oh, don't plug that.
I'm not a basketball fan, but the book was awesome.
Will you hand me a book over there? I'm going to show you how this looks.
Oh, these books aren't good enough for you?
I need a third. I need a small book for like a demo. Perfect. So here's kind of what this is going
to
look like.
Pull out the hard drive. Lost.
Yeah, he was plugged in.
Let me demonstrate catastrophic failure to you now.
Okay. So here's kind of what this looks like. If these are vertebra in my back, each of the big books is a vertebra that's bone, and then the small book in the middle is going to be the disc that's in between the bones. So the bones are obviously hard, they're bone, and then the disc is soft tissue. Essentially, so what happens is if you bend over with a straight back, you bend over like this, everything stays in alignment. Okay, the bones stay parallel to each other. But if you round your back, if I round over like that, then what happens is this side gets closer and it kind of goes like that. Okay, so you can see if this side is being pinched together, then if this was like a gel, then it would smush it out the back like that. Okay, so that's pretty much what's happening, and then all your spinal nerves run right here in that. This gets pushed up right against all your spinal nerves, and then it really, really hurts. So that's kind of what it looks like when you slip a disc in your back. So that's one way that you can hurt your back by being all round. The other way is if I smush together here, all the tendons and ligaments and whatnot that are running right here that are attaching these bones together, if this gets pulled apart too much, then all those rip. And so just like you sprain your ankle, you can sprain the ligaments in your back as well. And it'll kind of have a similar feeling. But really slipping the disc is the big one. That's going to make you, you know, be out for months or years or maybe decades.
That's the one you hear when athletes are like, slip the disc and you go, shit. Yeah. Like, that's not something that's just going to like bounce back right away.
There's no quick fix to any sort of disc injury, I'd say. You're probably going to be on the rack for minimum like a year and a half.
And I don't know how many times.
It's a complete rebuild of your back when this happens.
Yeah, I mean, we've advised athletes, you see them in the gym, and they're like, hey, you might want to take some steps to avoid that. And they're like, oh, but I got a competition next month. or, you know, there's something going on where they're not willing to take a step back. And all the time, people get hurt and they go, shit.
Yeah, but that's the same mindset that drove them ahead of time towards the injuries. Like, well, I'm not going to do the things I should do now. I'd rather do all these things that I would rather do now. Because those things that are right aren't my favorite thing to do at the moment.
Yeah.
to rip on, like, Louis C.K. has that bit like, I know everything you're saying is right for me to do, but those aren't my favorite things to do right now in this fucking moment. So I'm just not going to take your advice. The flip side of what Doug is saying is also true, because no one wants to know they should scale back and take care of priorities and shit before to get the better outcome. But we know that if you rush it, you get this back injury. But the flip side is true, that what we're trying to say, if you scale back and put position over everything, you got a nice flat back and you maintain that. This is an efficiency question. Now, like every time you train, even if it is a little less to get better reps, that's something that accumulates in time and gives you a much better result, I guess, would be the point of that.
Yeah, I mean, once you get injured, now you're not training at all.
Yeah.
You know, especially if it's a disc. You're done.
So stepping back to have that flat back is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Because the cumulative effect of that will make you fucking really strong.
Yeah, so we see it a lot in deadlifts. What mm-hmm. You know, we see it in squats as well.
Yeah, it's essentially any exercise where you end up bent over at any point. Like, so you got squats, deadlifts, cleans, snatches, kettlebell swings, RDLs, good mornings, anything where your feet are on the ground and you bend forward, you essentially want to bend forward with a quote-unquote neutral spine, or just, you know, a low back that's in the same position that it would be if you're standing up normal. So if you're bending at the hip with a straight back, then your back's going to stay with that same straight position that you normally see. If your hip doesn't move and you don't bend your hip and you try to roll your shoulders forward, then you're just going to round over at your back, and then that's what puts your back in a kind of a compromised position. That's a position you're more likely to get injured in.
Slash not laid.
Take that.
Slash not laid.
Another really interesting thing that I learned from Brett Contreras, who I would love to have on the show someday, by the way.
Glute master.
Anyone knows him? Yeah, the glute guy, Brett Contreras. He has a podcast as well. And one thing that I learned listening to his podcast not too long ago is that it's not even necessarily going from neutral to a fully flexed position that injures people. It's any type of flexion moment, which means any position where you're moving into flexion. So if you went from hyperextended to neutral, that's producing a flexion moment. So you're flexing from hyperextension to neutral, and that actually causes injury in a lot of people as well, which I hadn't really thought about in that way. I would have thought, well, maybe you have a hyperextension based injury specifically instead of a flexion based injury, but he was suggesting, if I remember hearing that correctly, that you actually get flexion based injuries from that flexion moment as well. So if you're hyperextended going down on a squat, I hyperextend here and then I get to the bottom and I kind of do that little butt wink thing, even if I just flex to neutral and then come back out, that actually can be problematic as well.
Well, I guess you don't want just any motion if you can help it, right? I mean, the more stable your spine is, the more still it is, I guess, the more accurately more efficiently going to generate force up through to the bar if it's on your back.
Right? So that's right.
What are some things that make people round their backs? I mean, I know people go, oh, I don't want to round my back, and then they end up still doing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a mix of things. I mean, it can be different
things. Trying harder won't take it away.
Some people just have a hard time activating certain muscles. Some people may have mobility issues. Mm-hmm. What's that list?
Well, a bunch of things. So first and foremost, in the example that I just gave, I said that if you bend at the hip and you keep your back straight, then you have a neutral spine, you're not rounding your back, and you're probably safe. So that basically implies that I have enough range of motion at my hip to move through that range of motion. So if I bend over like this, then it's really, really easy for me to keep a neutral spine. But the more and more I bend my hip, eventually I'm going to run out of hip range of motion. Like, that's about end range for me, which isn't bad. But if I try to go further than this, then my hip can't bend anymore. So for me to get my hands lower, I have to either like destabilize my shoulders or I have to round my back to get lower.
What happens when people touch their toes the uncool way? They say, well, I'll get my toes just unround or round your back totally to reach down there.
Yeah, it really matters where you get the range of motion. So, you know, if I want to touch my toes without weight on my back, you know, it's no big deal for me to round my back. I'm in an unloaded position. But if I have weight on my back, then all of a sudden I want to only keep the stress from that weight on my big joints and my big muscle groups. So if I stabilize my spine and bend over, I can have 300-400 pounds on my back right now for me to do a good morning or an RDL, and it's really no big deal because all the stress is on my hips, my glutes, my hamstrings, etc., and my low back is just maintaining a position. It's not trying to move like my prime movers would move. It's not trying to move like my primary joint, my hip, and like my glutes would be contracting against resistance. It's just trying to stay stable, which means not moving in the presence of potential change. It means that I could move, but I'm strong enough not to move, and that's what stability is. So I need stability at my low back and range of motion or mobility, mostly at my hips in this case. So that's a good place to start. Having enough range of motion at your hips is incredibly important. And then doing some amount of stability training with your low back, which anytime you're squatting and deadlifting with a neutral spine, you're training stability at your low back. So that comes back to what we said earlier about always making sure that you do perfect reps within a range of motion that you can control. So if you're a person that is squatting and every time you get, you know, more than halfway down, you round your back, well, I mean, there's many things that could be wrong there. You could, it might be like a stance issue where your feet are in the wrong spot, or you have an ankle mobility issue, which we haven't talked about yet, or you have a hip mobility issue or whatever. Maybe you just don't have very good squatting mechanics in general. You have really, really long legs and really short torso. There's many things that can go into that. But one of the primary things is that if you don't have enough hip mobility, then, you know, you're going to compensate by rounding your back because you have a lack of hip mobility. Your back takes over after your hip runs out of that range of motion.
Would you say that the hips don't lie?
The hips don't lie.
They don't. Didn't you have a problem with a hip problem being the root of a back issue you were dealing with?
There was for a long time, I would tweak my lower back every 6 months or so. And I was like, oh, that's just, you know, for some reason there's something wrong with my back. And then once I learned that internal rotation of the hip could lead to something like that, I was talking to Doug one day and we measured it. And sure enough, my right leg internal rotation wasn't as good as my left. And then once I started working on that specifically, all of a sudden I stopped tweaking my back and I actually felt a lot stronger in the squat and everything just kind of came together.
It's telling why this issue deserves a little bit closer attention, because you are obviously very experienced with resistance training and you presumably know your back very well. And even up to the recent past, you can have this issue where you're not sure what the cause that could be. You're still thinking localized.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably like 4 or 5, maybe 4 years ago. This is the old gym. Way back. So yeah, that's 4 or 5 years ago. Kind of got that pointed out, and I was like, ah. It's actually a big relief, because actually to solve that problem was super easy. I only had to do one stretch for a few months, and then.
Would you say the flip side is true? If somebody has an issue that they are trying to treat, a delay in progress might be a big sign that you haven't discovered the real problem of it. If it's ankle and you've been doing tons of back raises to try to fix your back, like you would try to strengthen your shoulder over and over again to fix a bad overhead squat position, there's no end to that amount of effort. It won't necessarily ever make the problem better.
I would be willing to bet most of it has to do with lacking flexibility in a very specific place and identifying it. You know, sometimes like, oh, my hamstrings are fine. It's like, yeah, but how's the internal rotation? How's the external rotation? How are all these things work? And a lot of times people don't even know what to measure. So finding out exactly working with somebody or you know, really identifying each little thing that you could measure. I mean, you did that with maximum mobility. You kind of created that course so that people could identify exactly where they need range of motion and do the stretches to fix it.
Yeah, I mean, that was the whole intent of that course, was to show you how to do some type of a test to see where you need to work on mobility and work on your stretching. Because in your case, you actually squatted great. Like, you had enough mobility to squat correctly.
Yeah, that's why I always thought it wasn't a problem, because if you looked at me, everything was fine.
Right.
Yet I was still, like, getting this pain.
It's a really counterintuitive thing to think that you need more hip internal rotation to be able to squat without eventually getting some type of back pain. Yeah. Same thing happens with people overhead. A lot of people can't go overhead. Even if they have full range of motion, they might lack internal rotation. They end up with shoulder problems. They really don't understand how that works, because when they reach overhead, it looks like they're fine. But if you run through a series of tests, again, a lot of the tests that we put in maximum mobility, and we're actually coming out with another product here, hopefully soon, we recorded like a year ago, called movement specific mobility.
It's coming out. We got a whole plan.
Yeah,
we did the hard part. We planned it.
Yeah. Planned it. Filmed it.
It's actually filmed and it's sitting there already.
We recorded it 15 months ago, 2 years ago, something like that.
2 days of all nighters.
Yeah, we did all night long.
Oh, jeez. It was hot as fuck in that gym.
We've had other projects. I haven't put it out yet. I apologize. We haven't put it out yet. But hopefully it's going to be out here in the next couple months. Hopefully.
Hit him up on Twitter, you know?
Yeah, hey, badger me until I just put it out.
Hey, but. Doug, this thing I was perfectly happy not knowing about, now I'm aware of it. When are you going to give it to me so I can be happy finally? That's what they'll throw at you.
That was cool, though, because it's like exactly what to do when you're squatting and deadlifting.
Right. It's pretty much what we're talking about right now. Like, if you have a specific movement problem, if you're rounding your back, I say, here's all the mobility things that could contribute to that. Here's how to test to see if this one is for you. And then here's all the stretches and soft tissue work you need to do to fix those problems. So hopefully we'll get that out very, very soon.
Did I derail you?
Kind of. So
doesn't count unless he loses his space. He's on top of his shit.
So the whole point of what we were talking about was that not knowing that you have a hip mobility issue that's counterintuitive, like a hip internal rotation deficit, whether it's both legs or truly a deficit means that one side is lacking mobility compared to the other, but which I actually think what that was what happened in your case. You weren't symmetrical. You just had
my left
lack
was
of mobility
good, but my right was bad. Yeah,
right. And so a lot of people can get generalized back pain, just kind of low back pain from that, and or they can get SI joint pain, which means kind of like back pain off to the side to put very lightly. So,
you know, what's funny is up until that point, lunges always bothered my like SI joint.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
That's hilarious.
What did you say? Fuck these lunges. I'm never doing these lunges ever again.
It was weird. I mean, and it's not a problem anymore, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you are going through full range hip flexion, then extending from full flexion, like on a lunge, you probably would end up with some type of aggravation.
And lunge was supposed to be the safe thing.
Yeah, I mean, it still generally is.
Yeah.
Especially if you're talking about having like flexion-based back injury, like if you round your back on deadlifts all the time, then going to something like a lunge or even a step up where you might bend over a little bit or split squats, those things, since you have a vertical torso, you tend not to have the options around your back. And so they tend to be much safer because you can't round. And then number two, you probably just have less weight on your back total because you're not doing a 500-pound squat. You're doing 200-pound lunges or 100-pound lunges or whatever.
Right.
So the load is less and you're less likely to get out of position because you have that vertical torso and you're not bent over anymore.
Yeah. Let's take a break real quick. When we come back, we're going to tell you exactly how to not round your back.
And what to do to have the swollest, strongest back in the galaxy. Maybe.
This is Tim Ferriss, and you are listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to barbellshrugged.com.
Barbell Shrugged is brought to you by you. To learn more about how you can support the show, go to barbellshrugged.com and sign up for the newsletter.
God almighty.
And we're back. Oh, man. Epic re-intro. Jeez. I got to look at the board. I forgot.
What are we talking about?
Something about backs, bro?
Oh, yeah.
I think we're going to tell people what they can do.
Oh, that's right.
To not have the problems we presented.
Practical tips.
The thing that bothers me the most is people.
That grinds your gears the most about.
That grinds my gears.
Let's just get going. Fuck.
People put so much effort in the gym and like not bending their back. And then they pick up kids and they go like this to pick up their kids or pick up a bag of groceries or something like that. And you watch them in the gym and they're like doing everything perfect. And the moment they step out of the gym, they completely forget everything. It's like,
well, that's when the injuries happen, oddly enough, when you pick up the groceries with a snotty 2-year-old. That's when the back explodes.
I think that's like a big mindset. It's like, what are you training for? And you should be just training movement for the sake of moving better all the time.
Yeah, we're using dumbbells and barbells and kettlebells and whatnot, all the things you would see in a gym. They're tools to teach you how to move no matter what you're picking up. They just happen to be really convenient to be able to adjust the load and the weight and whatnot. So if you're moving a couch or you're picking up your kid or I'm moving this table, or it doesn't really matter, like, you should still be applying all the same movement principles. If I go to pick this up, I'm just doing a deadlift. My knees are out of my toes. My heels are on the ground. I have a nice neutral spine. My shoulders are back. Head is up, et cetera, et cetera. Like, so it doesn't really matter what you're picking up. You probably should be doing it just like you would be doing it if it was 300 pounds on a barbell. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, if it's super, super light, you know, like, I can pick up this iPad in all kinds of funny ways, and I'm probably not going to hurt my back, but that said,
it is over 100 gigabytes.
100 gigabytes.
A lot
gigabytes
of memory
weigh a lot.
Yeah.
That said, a lot of people do hurt their back either at max load or max unload, however you want to say it. Like, there's either almost almost
the
no load or there's a lot of load. Because, like, if there's absolutely no load and I go like this to pick something up, like, there's very little, like you talked about, like, your muscles turning off when you're at end range flexion. If I'm at end range flexion and my muscles completely turn off and I already have some type of an issue there, like, there's already some type of, like, 90% tear or something like that.
Yeah.
It's just, like, needs that little bit extra to make it actually become symptomatic where you actually feel some pain. That really happens a lot when you are at a very, very low load. So it's at the extremes. At a very low load where you're not thinking about it and you think it's not a big deal, or a very, very high load tends to be when it happens.
That happened to our friend Sapphire one night, 3 a.m. on a Saturday.
picked up that dollar bill?
Yeah.
Is there you go?
Our friend Sapphire.
Diamond was fine.
She practices what she preaches.
Point number two would be
she
mobility.
She never does an archer back.
Oh, jeez, okay.
Oh, we got to get this show back on the road.
So next thing definitely is Charlotte's like losing it over there.
Hey, you know Sapphire. Come on now.
Charlotte's cursing in her head in British.
Can you edit Project Pat twerk it on this episode somehow? Okay.
Doug was saying something about mobility, I believe. Quit derailing this chat.
Gotta be mobile to get on those poles.
You do.
Oh, man.
All right, so yeah, hip and ankle mobility are probably your biggest ones. Like, if you can't move through a full range of motion at your hip, then your back is more or less going to take over and take over the range of motion in place of where your hip would be moving. So again, if I'm bent over and I can't bend further than this and I want to have my hands going lower, I have to round my back in that case, if we're only talking about those two joints, your hip and all the joints that are in your low back. The other thing that people don't really think about is that if you don't have very good ankle mobility, then what happens is if I we'll do another demo with this thing.
Seriously, if you're on iTunes, go to
Doug,
YouTube.
Doug, grab the bench.
Barbellstruck.com.
If I go to squat and say my knees can only go forward this far because my ankle only bends that much, so if I have like, we'll count it as, for lack of a better term, this is 0 degrees ankle mobility. If I go to squat down, I can only go this low with my back straight. If I want to go any lower, then I have to round my back to go lower.
You've all seen this in the gym.
Yeah, you see it all the time. We're like, someone's hips, I'll give myself a little more ankle range of motion here to make this a little bit easier.
What were you saying about Doug's ass?
Yeah, Charlotte.
Charlotte, with an AC camera right on your tank.
So here, I give myself a little bit more range to make this a little bit better of a demo. So if I go down, if I can't bend my ankle any more than that, my knees are blocked by the bench, then I can go down to about here before I start to round my back. And if I want to go lower than this, then I have to go like this.
That's exactly what you see.
And you see this in the gym all the time. People that have bad ankle mobility, they either obviously have their knees dived together, which we're not talking about right now, or they have their heels come off the ground, which we're not going to talk about right now, or they just round their back. And the reason they round their back is purely for balance. So it's not me not having a strong back in this case. If I go to here, so I can't go any lower than this, it's not because my back isn't strong. It's because if I want to go lower, if I go lower with a straight back, then I'll fall over backwards. And if I go lower just at all while keeping on my feet, then I have to round my back like this. It's purely for balance. So rounding my back positions my upper body over my feet where now I don't fall over backwards. So if that's the case, then there's no amount of strengthening or adding stability to my core or whatever you want to call it, that will fix that problem, because it's more of a balance issue where I intentionally turn off all the musculature in my low back that would normally keep it straight, because I have to round so I don't fall over. So it's a totally different deal in that case. So you could spend countless hours doing back raises and good mornings and whatever.
And a lot of people do that,
thinking your back isn't strong enough, but that is not the problem at all.
Yeah,
and that's the real key to realize when you see somebody that has a vertical shin, they're super bent over like this and their back is round, it's because they can't bend their ankles. And that's a counterintuitive thing to think about, how your ankles will be causing you back problems.
Yeah. Right. Before you do anything, folks, mobility.
And that's really disappointing for people to hear sometimes. They're like, oh, my back. They're over there. How do I stretch my back? That's always the first question. And it's like, whoa, maybe you should think about your ankles. And that person's going, you're a stupid-ass coach.
That's the biggest problem, I guess, in any gym, is that there's a monumental amount of wasted effort and thinking and planning and strife around trying to fix a problem that has a hidden, simple solution. All those sets of back raises and all those twists and turns with the mobility bands, it's not going to help if you're focusing on the wrong area. You get 90% of the effort out if you were being smarter about it.
So we went over ankles. What about hips? I mean, those get stuck. I mean, it's a very similar way, but... Mm. If you say your ankles have plenty of range of motion, but your hips are the issue, what are some things you might spot going on?
Yeah, so I mean, really, it's kind of the same thing. If you're kind of like I demoed at first, like if your hip stops moving, then to go any lower with my shoulders, to make the bar go any lower, if I discount my ankles and my knees for the moment, then I have to round my back. So in that case, doing lunge stretches or just doing like sitting in a squat position with if you hold on to something that to kind of like catch your balance, and you kind of just hang out in this position with a neutral spine, just let gravity pull you into to a deeper and deeper squat with everything aligned where your knees are out and your heels are on the ground and your back is neutral, you can just sit in those positions for a long time and it'll help you sink lower and lower and lower over time with that. You know, a lot of people call that tissue creep, where you kind of just maintain a position, and then the tissue stretches to end range, and then after, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes, 20 minutes is usually the example people give, that tissue will elongate, and then when you get out of that position, it'll actually stay a little bit longer than it was before, because you were in that position for long enough to get some type of a lasting change. So Google tissue creep.
So tissue creep. Yeah.
I'm a tissue creep.
So, you know, mobility is certainly an issue, and it's unfortunately not an issue that clears up, you know, overnight a lot of times. So if you're a person that has really bad ankle mobility, then you probably try to stretch your ankles and realize that, wow, I tried to stretch them and really nothing happened. So, you know, getting a lot of time under tension really seems to be the key in a lot of cases. You know, getting 20 minutes a day, or, you know, if you have a capsular issue, a lot of people say, like, you need to get like 5 or 6 20-minute sessions per day. That's like 2 hours of stretching.
Woo,
like in some extreme in some extreme cases.
Or so, 2 episodes of Barbell Shrugged, right?
That's right. Yeah, so you just need to spend more time stretching. A lot of people, they stretch for 30 seconds, and they think, like, the 30 seconds they spend stretching or the 2 minutes they spent stretching is going to outweigh the fucking 3 hours and 58 minutes where they weren't stretching and they were in the opposite position. And it's just, you're fighting a very uphill battle in that case.
It's one of these issues of kind of like gaining weight. Like, I'm trying my best to gain weight. I'm eating. I swear I'm eating. But how much time are you spending not fucking eating?
And you look at the whole picture.
It's like on balance. Like, how much time is going where? Yeah, and stretching is one of those big issues where it's like, you know, to you, it hurts. And to you, relatively speaking, it feels like a long time. But somebody looking across the room, you laid down for fucking 2 minutes and rolled around uncomfortably and then got up and walked away and started your workout. It's not objectively a lot of effort.
No. Yeah, looking at the whole day. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, there's 24 hours. Mm-hmm. I spent 8, 9, 10 of those hours sitting in a chair.
But I grabbed the band and did a stretchy thing for
tighter.
2 minutes.
Yeah, letting things get tighter. And then you think you're going to fix it with an hour-long class with 5 minutes of stretching at the end. Mm-hmm. Not going to happen.
Mm-mm. Crushing dreams over here.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, so I actually,
the stand-up desk can be very helpful with this. It has been for me. Like,
it really
when
is.
When I switched to a stand-up desk, my warm-ups got like 10 minutes shorter. Like within a couple weeks, because I found that I wasn't having to gain range of motion at my hips because of sitting. But sitting all day made it where I actually had to like get my hips more elastic and then start.
That's a point that maybe even precedes mobility, is what are the conditions leading to the mobility problem, and can you just remove that and save yourself all fucking trouble?
Yeah, there's always something going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there's standing, and then there's also, which people don't talk about very often at all, is you can work while kneeling. Like, so if I'm sitting, you know, if I'm sitting at my desk like this, I have a bent hip and a straight knee. But if I'm kneeling, then I have the opposite. I have an extended hip and a bent knee. So it truly is like the perfect opposite solution for sitting. Granted, you're probably not going to kneel down for 8 hours a day, but it's a great option to throw in the mix. Like,
switch back and forth.
A lot of times I'll alternate. Mike McGoldrick does that a lot.
Yeah, he does that a lot.
Yeah, like, I'll do it.
I mean, he's been to the CrossFit Games.
Yeah, he's a fantastic athlete. So,
as Rich said, standing, that one standing time up, he went.
Standing up, sitting down, kneeling, and then rotating between those is a great option. I know K-Star likes to do it where he stands and then kind of like puts his foot up on something, you know, maybe something a little bit lower. That's a great option as well. Even if you want to do half kneeling, which is basically a lunge position, like, you can have your computer in front of you if you're working on a computer, which we do a lot, and a lot of people do a lot, then you can be here and you can switch. You can kind of just be in a different position all day long, and, you know, you can be contracting your glute on your down leg and pushing your hips forward and getting a stretch in your hip flexors and in your quads while keeping your ribs down. You can be working on position all day long. But yeah, I thought of that.
Damn right.
Yeah. So like I was saying, mobility takes a long time to fix in a lot of cases. You
don't
know,
sleep in a ball.
In a ball.
I ball myself up like
don't
a used sweater.
In a fish
I
tank.
Sleep in the corner of my bedroom.
So if you can't
only
fix your mobility,
if
you can't fix your mobility in a couple weeks or a couple months, you know, how do you keep training? Like, what do you do? Like, if you can't overhead squat perfectly because you have shoulder issues, upper back issues, hip issues, ankle mobility issues, then and you overhead squat, you know, like shit, then you probably shouldn't keep trying to do that movement. You probably should pick some other movement where you do have the ability to go through some range of motion with perfect technique.
A lot of people think, hey, I just need to go lighter. I need to scale to a lighter load because, you know, you're doing an overhead squat and you're going, and then the weight dumps forward at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
And people think, oh, it's my strength. It's like, no, it's because of, say, something like mobility.
Yeah.
Like, you need to just ditch the movement altogether.
Yeah, that's the most common one you always see is people just, like, dropping it down.
Oh, I see it all the time. They'll be doing a Metcon, and it's like, they'll do a couple, and they just barely hang in there, and then it's like, duh. They dump it at the bottom. I'm like, you shouldn't have done any of those.
Yeah, it's a fight.
Everyone was a bad practice rep.
Yeah, it's a fight you're essentially never going to win. Like, just practicing with lighter weight, you're never really going to fix the problem. You'd be much better off to work on your mobility specifically. Find out what your problem is, if it's shoulders or hips.
It's a new one.
So shoulders, hips, or ankles, you know, find out which one is the main thing that's keeping you from being able to do something correctly, fix that, and then in the process, you can be doing other movements where you actually can lift something heavy. You can be doing good mornings or RDLs or deadlifts from blocks or, you know, half squats. You can do a half squat to, you know, I keep using this bench, but if my ankles don't bend very much, then I can squat down here. I barely bent my ankle at all, but my knees bent at 90 degrees, my hips bent at 90 degrees, and I can still put a pretty heavy weight on my back.
Yeah.
And in this case, since I'm going down to a bench, I know I put a condition in place to know that I won't squat any lower than this. That way, every single time I do a rep, I know that I'm not going to go further than I've chosen to.
Yeah, the box squat is awesome. I like to use like a box with people. And then stack plates, and they're like, okay, know that you used 5 25-pound plates.
Mm-hmm.
They're about the same thickness, every time you squat. And then, you know, you identify where where their end range of motion happens, and then over time you can, like, pull them out as they get better. So you don't have to stop training. You don't have to stop doing it altogether. You can still put a lot of weight on the bar.
Yeah, so box squats are awesome because you can set that height, kind of like you suggested, and then you can just remove a plate or remove a mat or something and then take it down in a half an inch or an inch or however much you've chosen to. Other really good options are to do RDLs and good mornings. Those are fantastic, especially if you have ankle mobility. It's just because your ankle's not going to bend at all. And the other thing is that you're starting off in a neutral position, and so you just go by bending over at the hip, you go as low as you can. Maybe you can only bend over like this far. Like I'm like maybe like 30 or 40 degrees bent over. So if I go to here and then I feel like my back's the thing that starts around, then I don't go any further. I just come back up. I just go until I touch the end of my range of motion and then I come back up. So in that case, I never allow myself to start in a bad position because those are the hardest movements to fix where the bar's on the ground and I have to go to the bar and now I'm round and there's no possibility for me to be in a good position because the bar is just too low to start with.
See that a lot in deadlifts. People go right down to the bottom and then down there try to achieve the position they should be in versus starting at the tippy top and then working their way down in the proper position.
Yeah, if you have a good coach or a good trainer, and especially if you're in a one-on-one setting, they're probably going to start you doing deadlifts where you're doing some type of a rack pull. They'll like put the bar right above your knee. They'll see that you do a perfect rack pull. They'll lower it down a little bit. Same concept that Mike just laid out with the box squats and having different mats set at different heights where you can remove a mat and lower yourself down. If you're in some type of a cage or something where you have like scoops or pins or something where you can put the bar at a specific height or you can put the bar on blocks or whatever.
Or dig a hole in the ground. Fucking old school strongman style. Works
old school.
Fred Beeshe?
Fred Beeshe, man.
Fred Beeshe.
Talking about that.
Paul Anderson, the great strongman.
Go watch that episode.
Who needs a rack?
We have old Dr. Fred on for round two, by the way.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, dude, Fred Beeshe's the man. So yeah, you can start, you know, mid-thigh or above the knee or maybe mid-knee, which is kind of no man's land. Nobody likes to pull from there. But
no. Disaster zone.
Below the knee, you know, mid-shin. You can just work your way down, and then wherever you can grab onto the bar in a perfect position, but any lower than that, you start to round a little bit, that's just where you stop, and you just pull from there. There's no reason you have to pull from this magical height that happens to be the radius of a bumper plate.
Yeah, there's always something you can do to load, which is better than just skipping the thing entirely.
Yeah.
Exactly.
What Doug just said, it was like...
The fact that I use the word radius?
Yeah. Well, not necessarily, but you know that it's like you're going to the rate, like the standard size of the radius of a plate, which in real life means absolutely nothing.
Yeah, they didn't build that for any specific person. They just made a big circle, and they said, okay, this is the height now.
Is how many
inches
it is?
Everyone pulls from this height.
How many inches do you think this fucking thing should be? I don't know. 12? Sounds good to me.
Yeah, and all
is it 12?
All the 5'2" people think that they should be pulling from the same weight height the bar right. height as the 6'11" people.
Oh, yeah. You look at some of these really short weightlifters and like the it almost starts at their knees sometimes.
Yeah.
And then other guys.
Sulamalu was like the most extreme example.
It seems like it's not even halfway up.
He some started from no man's land.
It's like, it isn't, in comparison, it's on a, to you. Right. You have the longer legs. Like it's starting way further down on your shin. And like people do consider it like the same exact movement.
Right.
Technically, it's not. So if you're one of those taller people, cut yourself some slack.
Yeah. There's a reason that there's not that many NFL strength and conditioning coaches that are like, all right, I'm going to teach all of our 7 foot tall people how to do snatches from the floor. They might do some variation of snatches. They might do hang power snatches, depending on the ankle mobility of basketball players, which is traditionally not that great for a lot of reasons. But they might do a hang power snatch as an example, but they probably wouldn't pull a full snatch with a full overhead squat from the floor with someone who's already in the NBA. It's just not worth it. It's not worth the risk reward benefit. They're not built for it in most ways. Most NBA players have short torsos, super long limbs, not very good ankle mobility. They're crazy tall, so they would need even extra mobility to get even lower relative to their height compared to shorter people. And it's just not that beneficial for them to have to go through all that when they can do other things. They can still have those guys lunge and box squat and get strong for the sport of basketball. That has nothing to do with making them good at weightlifting.
And there's they have tons of bitches, so they don't need to like...
Yeah,
it's like, what do I need to snatch for?
All right.
So
get off the mobility train. Chris, what are some exercises? Sometimes it is just a weak back. What are some things that people can do to strengthen that?
If
they've identified already, they go, okay, it's not mobility. I'm just having a hard time getting my back to fire.
You know, I would say there's things that always are that need to be in a program. Are you doing something where you're resisting rotation? Are you doing some ab work? Are you doing some back raise? My favorite way to do back raises ever was to put my hands out or to try to raise out flat and hold the top. So I'm trying to spend more time with my back flat. Be honest, I tried years of super heavy back raises, super heavy good mornings, trying to train my way out of a posture thing. Ultimately, I think the only thing that worked was things like those damn tempo front squats, where I said, finally, I was going to take the weight off.
As Doug was mentioning, the time under tension.
You got to really think that's not – I spent too much time trying to think I need a stronger back. I need to just keep putting on the weight, and I'll eventually not fail. But the real thing is taking the weight off and spending more cumulative time sitting there, even as I'm breathing in, out, and maintaining that position. It was accumulating time, ultimately, that was the thing that made me stronger. So I'd take the bar out of the front squat rack, walk back, intentionally breathe 3 deep, full breaths where I'm losing some position, but I'm getting it back each time. Again, the weight's really light. And then easing down, slow eccentric reps, and then spending time at the bottom. Down there, is my back straight? Getting video, is it straight? People watch me, is it straight? Is it getting better? So ultimately, it was just time in the front squat position that finally allowed me to get a real feeling of what vertical felt like. And it was then that the front squat and my squat performance started taking off again, because I achieved what I was kind of running away from all those years, trying to work around the obvious problem. All I needed was just more time trying to be straight.
How do you think you could have told your younger self that and him actually listen, though?
Again, I'm one of the most stubborn people in the world. I don't know if there was.
Well, because most people are probably in that boat. It's
I had
not
to
just
persist,
that you're stubborn.
Yeah,
a lot
I
mean,
of people
I had to persist
in my
that.
Folly for a while, but I think, fuck, man. Maybe, I say, give me 4 weeks and I'll prove it to you, young Chris. Maybe that would work, but I don't really know what I would say to myself. I think I had to persist in my folly for a little while before I figured out that problem. But I think using a tempo squat was the thing that really did make the difference for me. I think I didn't really commit to it until Travis said, this is probably what you got to do. Travis Mash, he really fucking laid it in there for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
But more time was the answer for that, man.
Yeah.
Just time.
So that's a really good point about sometimes, you know, we've talked about mobility and technique and doing it perfect and all that and exercise selection, but you're right. Sometimes it really just is your back isn't strong enough. So if you can get into a perfect deadlift start position with a perfectly neutral spine, and then when you go to pick up the weight, you know, you go from perfect position and then I go to pick it up and I fold, you know, throughout the movement, then yes, at that point you are a person who needs to focus on strength and stability over mobility more than likely. So that's a motor control issue. So back to, you know, pulling only perfect reps. So you're back to doing technical maxes and technical lifts. You're not doing, you know, a set of 8 with the heaviest weight you can do, or a set of 5 or a set of 3 or a single, whatever. You're doing a set of 8 or a single or whatever it happens to be with a weight that you can do perfect for every single rep.
Yeah.
So that's back to the concept of practicing, not necessarily training, right? You're practicing doing it perfect. When you're in the weight room, you're training to be sure, but but you should be practicing perfect movement. That's what you're doing the majority of the time. And then, you know, you can use lower skill movement if you really want to kind of, you know, blow out the your metabolic capacity or something like that. Doing like Airdyne sprints is fantastic. It's super low skill, and you can really like burn yourself down metabolically because it's super low skill, and you have to worry about technique the whole time. That's the easy example. That's kind of on the extreme end of it. But instead of doing, you know, deadlifts in your Metcon, you know, maybe you end up doing goblet squats in your Metcon. They're easier to do correctly. You're still going to be kind of working the same stuff. It's not the same movement pattern technically necessarily, but you're much more likely to keep a neutral spine to work your core musculature and all the muscles that are surrounding your back, holding it stable into that neutral position in a perfect way on a goblet squat compared to doing deadlifts, which if you're a person that chronically round your back on deadlifts, then you're going to fall back into that pattern of Metcon as you get fatigued. So a goblet squat would be a better example or better exercise in this example.
Yeah. On like just the activation side of the house, and like sometimes I find that if I'm doing a deadlift or a squat or whatever, I feel myself getting out of position, and I'm like, and I'm like, why am I doing that? And every time it goes back to me is I didn't warm up properly. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh yeah, I got the blood circulating, I did some mobility, mm-hmm. I got everything going, but I forgot to do something that specifically got my back extending. You know, mm-hmm. just doing some back extensions or I like to do arch body rocks mm-hmm. as part of my warm up. And if I skip something like arch body rocks and I don't try to get the muscles to tighten up from my heels to the top of my head, mm-hmm. then sometimes like it doesn't matter how much effort or thinking of like keep the back straight. It just doesn't want to do it. And then, you know, once I get up to 80-90%, it's like the squatting I did to get up to that point doesn't activate the same way as had I done an arch body rock or some back extensions
like
or something like that. So
band tension stuff, so like a band of good morning, or even this pitch shot, it's got a little band tension. When I feel band tension across my spine and I'm focusing on position, if I'm out, I can feel it fatiguing quicker than it should. So like stepping on a band, putting it over my head, and just standing for a few seconds, mm-hmm. arching, bending over, and arching just to feel to make sure, is this feel efficient?
Yeah, so like I've gotten squatting before and going, man, I don't know how I forgot to do this again, but I'll go back and start warming up. If I feel something give, I'm like, okay, the muscles just aren't activating and firing the way they're supposed to. So there's like that motor pattern issue happening, which is activation happening. And then again, like I was training with AJ one day, he's like, oh, your lower back just needs some work. And it was like, he was able to identify, like, do this exact exercise. If your back is breaking down in that exact spot, this is the exercise to do it. It's a form of back extension. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, if you are folding over, doing more squats is going to be great. You need to do some accessory work, you know, somewhere in the 10 to 15 rep range to really work those muscles, that very specific muscle where it is weak, and then strengthen that.
To that point, you see a lot of big lifts coming out of Westside Barbell. One thing you typically mm-hmm. don't see a lot of, you don't see a lot of injured backs. And what are they doing? Assistance work to target every angle of the back. A lot of high rep, a lot of practice working the back, and not a lot of limit loads. But also, to Doug's point earlier, you see a lot of squat sets and deadlift sets where the weights aren't so limit, but there's lots of repetitions. There's lots of 1 to 3 rep sets where the whole aim is how fast, how perfect can you move. So you don't see any rounded backs. So those two things together are a potent recipe for really strong spines and straight spines. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I was going to throw in that did a lot of good for me recently was, or probably about a year ago, I knew to get tight and, like, you know, take a hold in a breath or whatever, but I was holding it way up high on my chest.
Oh, yeah.
And then even though I knew that I should be holding it down low, someone observed me. Mm. I was like, dude, you're not doing that. So that was like astronomically huge.
Think about breathing into your balls.
Big belly breath.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you can't get that, you cannot achieve.
Breathe into your balls.
Have you tried that one yet?
Have you felt your scrot expand?
No. I'm trying now.
It works.
I see.
Feel good.
I saw your pants shift slightly. It's either you're breathing appropriately or excited. The podcast is coming to an end. Either one of those things can happen.
My balls feel oxygenated.
What if you can't tell? How can you tell if you're round? I train by myself, and I can't tell if I'm rounding. What do we do?
Yeah, that's true, man. A lot of people say that. And if you've been training for a long time and you know what it feels like to have a round back versus not round back, it's kind of like, what do you mean you can't tell? Like, it's round or it's not round. Like, it just doesn't make sense. But yeah, that question comes out of a lot of beginners. Like, in, you know, back when we were training at Faction on a daily basis, coaching all the classes, I get that question every single day. Like, I can't tell if I'm round. So at that point, With beginners, it really is more about external feedback for them. It's about someone watching them and telling them, you know, hey, you were round or you weren't round, and about coming over there and actually like putting your hands on them and saying,
yep.
Hey, like this position right here is neutral, and then getting them to move around a little bit, and then trying to get them to round their back and saying, this is round, this is neutral, this is round, this is neutral, and put them in those positions so they can actually feel it. You got to have them feel it and then identify it while they're feeling it for them to really get it.
And if a coach is showing you that you're neutral or round way too often, you might want to...
Your coach might get his hands on your hips.
Sexual predator on your hands. Look, I'm trying to tell you, you are still not straight. You're going to need some more work.
They're round and voluptuous.
What if they're already injured?
If you're already injured, so you get a couple options. Depending on how injured you are, obviously you should probably go see a physical therapist or something if you have like a significant injury. If your back is kind of achy once in a while, it kind of comes here and there and whatnot, but you're not really like injured, then you probably want to eliminate the movements that keep you really, really bent over. If your back's already bothering you, then heavy good mornings probably aren't your best bet. You'd probably be much better off to stick to front squats and or lunges. Things where you have a vertical torso tend to be less stressful on your back, especially single leg work, since, again, you're not loading your spine with quite as much weight. You're always going to lunge with less weight than you front squat with for the most part. So it's less weight, and then also since you're not bent over, you don't take the stress on your back. You tend to take it more on your knees, as an example.
Yeah.
What about a belt? Does that magically fix all my problems?
No, not really. I actually think belts can be problematic for people that have injuries, because it almost encourages them to rely on the belt to provide the stability for them rather than their own musculature. And then it also encourages them to go extra heavy because they feel good, but they're not actually injury-free yet. I'd much rather see somebody train without a belt the vast majority of the time, and then, you know, get comfortable enough with it. If they happen to be a competitive weightlifter or a competitive powerlifter, and they think that it'll give them an extra 10, 15, 20 pounds or more, depending on your sport and how heavy you're lifting. But most of the time, I think you should be building a strong back, not relying on a strong belt.
And that advice goes for injury-free people too, right?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, okay.
That advice will apply to any sort of toy or gizmo in the gym. If there's something you could use that would help your ordinarily functional and well-moving and strong form move a little bit better. So if you're already strong and healthy and you put a belt on, you can push out against it and lift a little bit more, then maybe you'll get a little heightened adaptation. But it cannot be a crutch. Mm-hmm. It cannot be something you hide behind that allows you to save face, to not have to take the break you know you need. I'm pretty sure if you have a problem in your back, you know if you're using a belt as a crutch. If you're scared of taking that fucking thing off when you get to 315 in a squat bar or something, you know you've got a problem. If you know you recognize a crutch, you got to get that fucking thing out of there. Yeah. That's going to hamper your long-term strength. Yeah. I've been in a situation where I felt that, like, I don't have my favorite knee sleeves, my favorite belt. I guess it won't go as strong or as heavy in this workout. That's just the fucking wrong mentality to have. You're in this to be strong, and if you're hiding behind something, you're intentionally undoing your progress.
Is there belt support groups?
Belt support groups.
Hi,
my name is Chuck, and I'm scared to take this fucking belt off. I only squat 315 without this belt. It's 455 with. I don't know what to do. Help me.
Corey talked about that. He has squat days and stuff like that where the belt's not what he's using. He's got days he uses shoes, days he uses belts, days he doesn't use belts,
doesn't
judge himself too hard on like, oh, I couldn't squat as much without my belts. You just see it as a different exercise.
It is different. Mm-hmm. You have to judge everything by what it is. But I say, if you can't take those shoes off, that belt off, without feeling worried about how you're going to perform, you got to fix your training.
Yeah.
You know you got a problem.
And if you're grounding your back in the gym, I'm going to bring this one home, Doug.
Let's hear it.
You're probably rounding your back, quote unquote, other places in life, like that time you didn't tip your pizza guy. That's rounding your back.
You're probably fapping with your back rounded too.
That's, yeah.
We can't fix mobility up there.
We totally address that.
Yep, we're okay, fading. Cool.
If you can't fix your mobility, you got to change your exercises.
I say, and you probably haven't spent enough time. Haven't given the time. If you say
the
it
only
can't
people
be fixed.
I can think of that can't fix their mobility is if they have like a plate or something installed. I've known people who like really screwed up their ankles. They got plates in there and like. No, that's where the metal starts. I'm like, all right, guess you're not squatting that deep anymore.
In that case, it's okay to say there's certain things I can no longer do. It's fucking fine. I'll just squat to a box. You'll still be strong. The world will keep spinning. You'll be happy.
Right. But that is a very important point about mobility. That not all range of motion issues are fixable. Right. Like sometimes you do have a metal plate from a surgery. Sometimes you just have a bony block. Like some, a lot of people can't extend their elbow all the way because Chris is a prime example.
Has that. Rob has that.
It's a little piece of bone that keeps that. Yeah, no amount of soft tissue work is going to fix it. Like,
yeah. I've jumped on his elbow.
Yeah, you get bone spurs or something. Like you get some actual bony growth in there that keeps you from going all the way in end range, and you just there's no stretching that can fix that. So sometimes you really can't fix your mobility. Happens to people's ankles all the time, like your ankle. Like there'll be a hard end range feel that you just can't fix your ankles. That sucks, but that's reality for some people. So for those people,
don't sacrifice your back.
Yeah, don't break your back too. Like figure out a different exercise that's going to hurt you.
Don't make it right. Didn't your mom ever tell you that shit?
Awesome. All right.
That's right.
If you leave your dog in your car, that's rounding your back.
That's right.
If you fart in a hotel room that you're sleeping with,
it's not too hot, it's fine.
If you bring your fucking dirty ass fucking shoes into the hotel room with your bros staying for fucking 3 days and it smells like ass, that is rounding your back.
I'm glad you brought this topic up because this guy's the smelliest fucking feet.
Dude, they were terrible.
I left them in the rain, got a little mildew.
And then I decided to just let them.
I washed them, they're fine.
Me and Chris almost called and asked for another room.
Like, man, is there a dead body behind the fucking wall of this hotel? What is going on here? Did a pipe burst and there's black mold underneath?
We really thought it was a sewage issue.
There's a situation here.
We knew it was Mike's shoes. We were really going to call the front desk.
This guy's got some wet, soggy Innovates in the back corner, stinking up the whole fucking place.
They're New Balances.
New Balances. Well, I couldn't even tell. They're so stanky.
Shut it down.
Before we go.
Here we go.
For God's sakes, if you are a CrossFit gym owner or you know a CrossFit gym owner, we have a Barbell Business podcast as well that they might not know about. Tell them to go watch Barbell Business because it's totally awesome. It's me, Mike, and AJ. We post once a week, just like Barbell Shrug, except it's audio only most of the time. Sometimes we do video. So it's on iTunes, Barbell Business. Go watch that, please.
If you don't watch that, you're rounding your back.
You're rounding your back.
Thank you. Bye.